Hi and welcome to my Parsha share. This week's Parsha, Parsha's Tzav, starts off with the Pasuk Tzavas Aharon Bes Bonav Lemar, Zois Toiras Ha'oila, Hi Ha'oila Magda Ala Mizbeach, Kol Ha'layla Ad Ha'boiker, Ve'esh Ha'mizbeach Tukad Boi. Command Aharon and his sons and tell them, this is the law of the burnt offering, the Oila. It is the burnt offering that burns on the altar all night until the morning, and the fire of the altar shall be kept burning in it. So, what would you expect to hear about immediately after that pasuk? I think you'd want to hear about the korban oila, the burnt offering, right? Zois toiras ha'oila. This is the law of the oila. But that's not what follows. What follows are the details of a process known as terumas hadeshen. These psukim that you've just heard describe the procedure for the handling of the ashes that result from the burnt offering on the altar. The kohen, the priest, is instructed to change into special linen garments, lift the ashes that the fire has consumed from the burnt offering on the altar, and then place those ashes beside the altar, beside the Mizbeach. In fact, if you actually do want to hear about the laws of Oila, of the burnt offering, you need to go back to the beginning of the previous parasha, Vayikra, and you'll hear about the laws of Oila there. Which prompts the obvious question, why does the Torah introduce this passage with the words Zois Toiras Ha'oila? And why doesn't it say Zois Toiras Ha'oila at the beginning of Parshas Vayikra? In his Sefer Mikdash HaLevi, my late grandfather gives a beautiful answer. Clearing away the ashes seems like the least important thing you can do when it comes to the Korban Oila. All it does is create space for the next sacrifices to be burnt on the altar. But, says the Mikdash HaLevi, clearing the ashes is in fact the most important aspect of the korban, because unless you've cleaned away the trash that's left behind, you can't bring the new korban. It's such a powerful lesson. Removing the unwanted and the unnecessary is key to achieving your goals. People want to get to the highest level without dealing with the junk and getting rid of it, but that's impossible. Terumas Hadeshen, Zois Toiras Ha'oila. If you want to know what the core of bringing the holiest offering to God is, it's making sure that no ashes are left acting as an impediment to getting it done properly. I actually have a funny story that kind of fits in with this idea, with this theme. Many years ago, in the late 1990s, Ehud Olmert was my guest for Shabbat, for Shabbos. He was then the mayor of Jerusalem, and agreed to be the scholar in residence at my shul in London. In the late 1990s, Olmert was still a member of the Likud party, and his politics aligned with the UK Conservative Party. At around the same time, I'd been asked by Lord Geoffrey Archer, the famous author and former vice chair of the Conservative Party, to act as his liaison in the Jewish community for his bid to become the first mayor of London. Archer's poll numbers looked great, and he was set on a path to become the mayor. His opponent was the Labour Party maverick, Ken Livingstone, and incredibly, the first public debate between the two of them took place at my synagogue, the Saatchi Synagogue, with a sell-out audience and extensive media coverage. Before Olmert arrived for Shabbos, I suggested to Lord Archer that perhaps he could host the mayor of Jerusalem at his penthouse duplex apartment overlooking the Houses of Parliament from across the River Thames for a fundraising breakfast and a roundtable discussion. He agreed, and on that Friday morning, a range of Archer supporters gathered to meet Ehud Olmert at Lord Archer's apartment to hear what advice this seasoned city mayor had for Lord Archer if he were to succeed in his bid to become London's mayor. Geoffrey, Olmert began, I'm sure you have many ideas about what you'd like to do with London if you become the mayor, but let me tell you what is most important for you to do if you ever become the mayor. Always make sure that the garbage is collected on time. If 1 or 2 weeks go by and the trash builds up, it won't matter what programs you've set up or how many parks you've built or how many tourists are visiting London, you'll be done. Making sure the garbage is collected regularly is the key to keeping people happy. Everything else must come after that. So that's it. Trumas Hadeshen, it's the key to success. Funnily enough, both Jeffrey Archer and Ehud Olmert ended up in prison, one for perjury, the other one for accepting bribes and for corruption. It would appear that they weren't very good at cleaning up their own garbage, their own trash. But the advice stands, and it fits in with the message of Zois Torah Sa'ola. Let's get back to Trumas Hadeshen. While he was doing the Trumas Hadeshen, the Kohen had to first change into specific linen garments. Then he had to collect the ashes, and then he had to dispose of them properly. The Gemara Maseches Shabbos, Daf Kuf Yud Gimel Amud Beis and Daf Kuf Yud Dalet Amud Aleph, discusses the changing of garments by the priest into the Trumas Hadeshen clothes as not just a physical necessity, but as a directive that ensures spiritual dignity and enables proper renewal. In the Gemara, Rabbi Acha bar Abba, quoting Rabbi Yochanan, emphasizes the point that the garments worn for menial tasks should not be the same ones as those which are used for serving something new and sacred. Each task has to have its designated uniform, appropriate for that assignment. The Gemara continues, as the school of Rabbi Yishmael taught, the Torah instructs us in proper etiquette for temple service, just like the clothes a person wears when he cooks for his master shouldn't be the ones that he wears when he pours him a glass of wine. Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch expands on this idea and suggests that every new day and every new mitzvah requires us to take out the garbage, both literally and metaphorically, to make room for new growth and new opportunities. Part of that is to take off the clothes we were wearing before and to put on new clothes. Later on in the parasha, we find other instructions, these ones regarding the Korban Mincha, the flour offering, and the Minchas Miluim, which was the anointment offering. These instructions also stress very specific procedures for preparation and consumption. Notably, the text details the breaking of an earthenware vessel that was used to boil the sin offering. Rashi explains that this was a practical measure to prevent the reuse of a vessel that has absorbed, as it were, the sin offering. The vessel was holy and designated, but for a specific time and purpose. Once that purpose is done, so is the vessel. The Kotzker Rebbe draws a profound parallel between the breaking of the vessel and the human condition. Just as the vessel is broken to remove the remnants of the sacred offering, symbolizing that it can no longer hold the same sanctity, humans too are like earthen vessels. We absorb experiences like pain and joy, and then we break and we're remade. The process of breaking and remaking is intrinsic to our spiritual growth and to our capacity to contain God's divine light. And it's even much bigger than that, because our journey through life, which is filled with countless moments of breaking and rebuilding, mirrors the cosmic drama of creation and repair, encapsulating the essence of what God is constantly doing and has done since the dawn of creation. Let's face it, what you thought of as seemingly mundane acts of waste management and the breaking of vessels actually underscore a larger cosmic truth about human existence and spiritual growth. Through the lens of Parshas Tzav, we can learn that every act, no matter how small or routine, is imbued with the potential for sanctity and transformation. Whether it is the clearing of ashes, the changing of garments, And even the breaking of vessels, we can always find profound opportunities for renewal and holiness. Let's delve further into Trumas HaDeshen. It is clear that Trumas HaDeshen served as a daily reminder that it is important for the Kohen, the elevated priest, the guardian of the temple and of Jewish ritual, to begin each day with a humble task, notwithstanding his elevated position as a priest in God's temple. The Chovos HaLevavos explains the rationale behind this, telling us that this initial ritual act of the day was put there deliberately to prevent arrogance and pride in the Kohanim. Exactly because of the Kohen's elevated status, chosen for the divine service of the Avodas HaMikdosh, the Torah instructs him to take out the ashes. Do you know what? Taking out the ashes will serve the Kohen well, as it will act as a powerful check against pride, reminding him that despite his holy work, he must start his day with a seemingly lowly task. Humility is at the center of who great people are. The greatest people are the ones who are totally comfortable with menial tasks and with doing stuff that seems below their dignity. There's a wonderful story about the Chofetz Chaim that encapsulates this concept perfectly. Despite his vast knowledge and despite being one of the greatest Torah scholars of his time, he was known for his extraordinary humility. On one occasion, a visitor came to his yeshiva in Radin, seeking out the illustrious Chofetz Chaim that he'd heard so much about. He expected to find him in a grand study surrounded by books and hushed attendants. Instead, the visitor found the Chofetz Chaim carrying a heavy load of firewood for the yeshiva's furnace. When the visitor expressed surprise that a man of such spiritual stature would engage in such menial physical labor, the Chofetz Chaim responded, "On the contrary, serving others in any way necessary is the truest expression of our service to God. Why designate this task to someone else if I can do it? I'm delighted to do it and to ensure that the boys in the yeshiva are warm. It is my greatest honor to do this." This story is a real Trumas HaDeshen story. And by the way, the Chofetz Chaim was a Kohen, so this Trumas HaDeshen behavior was in his DNA. The story teaches us that true greatness is not measured by the loftiness of our positions, but rather in our ability to remain grounded and humble, recognizing the sanctity in every act of service, no matter how small. Trumas HaDeshen reminds us that we must keep humility at the forefront of who we are, ensuring that we do not let our pride cloud our judgment or our hearts. Let me tell you a couple more stories to illustrate this point. Here's one about Reb Aryeh Levin, affectionately known as the Tzaddik of Yerushalayim, the Tzaddik of Jerusalem. Reb Aryeh was renowned not only for his spiritual stature, but also for his profound humility and for his acts of kindness. One particular story stands out, illuminating his incredible character and his deep humility. Despite his importance in the community, Reb Aryeh would personally visit and help the sick, the poor, and even prisoners, attending to their needs himself, not relying on others to do the work. On one occasion, he was seen cleaning and preparing a small apartment for a couple who just got married, who apparently had no one else to help them. Someone asked Reb Aryeh why someone of his standing, of his stature, would engage in such menial work. Surely he could have found someone else to do it. And Reb Aryeh responded, "What greater joy is there than preparing a home for a new family, helping them start their life together?" Reb Aryeh Levin was a living example of Trumas HaDeshen, demonstrating how the most menial of tasks can pave the way for the best of new beginnings. Then there's the story of Rav Moshe Feinstein. It's one of my favorites. Rav Moshe was one of the leading halachic authorities of the 20th century, but he exhibited his humility in countless ways, often through acts that others might consider beneath their dignity, and certainly below his dignity. Here's the story. One day, the elevator in Ramosha's apartment building broke down, leaving several people stuck in the elevator between floors. Without hesitation, Ramosha, who was already an elderly man, went up the stairs to the floor closest to the stuck elevator. When he got there, Ramosha stood near the elevator shaft, chatting with those inside the stuck elevator so that he could keep their spirits up while they waited for help to arrive. Someone later asked him why he, with his esteemed status and advanced age, personally attended to this matter. Ramosha simply responded, "Every person is my brother, my sister. How could I not do everything in my power to comfort them in their time of distress? Why should someone else do it if I can do it?" This story highlights how even the greatest rabbinic luminary saw the act of comforting others as a sacred duty, embodying the essence of humility and service. It wasn't below his dignity. On the contrary, it was a task meant for him and therefore the ultimate dignity. And here's one last story about Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter was undoubtedly one of the greatest rabbis of his time. He was the leading rabbi in Vilna, and he founded the Musa movement and nurtured the early generation of Musa leaders. Now picture this. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter was on a train from somewhere to Vilna, and he was a smoker, so he took out a cigar and he began smoking it. Suddenly, this young guy starts kicking up a fuss about the smoke. Everyone's rolling their eyes. "Hey, it's a smoking car, right? Let the man smoke and just go to another car." But Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, he just puts out his cigar and opens the window to let in the fresh air. He doesn't make a fuss. But wait, it gets better. This fellow is not done yet. He walks over to Rabbi Yisrael's seat and slams the window shut and starts shouting at the rabbi, "Who asked you to open the window? It's freezing cold. Are you nuts?" Rabbi Yisrael, cool as ever, just nods. He says sorry, gets back to his sefer. Fast forward to Vilna, and there's this massive crowd waiting to greet Rabbi Yisrael Salanter as he gets off the train. After all, he's one of the most respected rabbis in Europe. The young man's jaw hits the floor. "Are you kidding?" He's been yelling at a living legend. He's totally mortified, and he rushes over to Rabbi Yisrael Salanter to apologize. Rabbi Yisrael brushes him off. "Well, why are you apologizing? It's all good." The guy blushes every color. Rabbi Yisrael puts his arm around the young man's shoulder. "Come over to see me tonight. Let's have a chat." The fellow comes over to Rabbi Yisrael, and in the course of their conversation, he tells the great rabbi that he's actually in Vilna to get certified as a shochet. So Rabbi Yisrael hooks him up with his son-in-law for the exam, for the shochet exam. Now the story gets even crazier. The guy bombs the test. It's a total disaster. But instead of showing him the door, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter gets him tutors who give him a crash course in shechita, and they get him through the exam. Then Rabbi Yisrael found him a job. This same guy who yelled at him on the train. Unbelievable, right? Before going off to his new job, the young man calls in on Rabbi Yisrael Salanter to say thank you and to say goodbye. "Why did you do all this for me?" he asks the rabbi. Rabbi Yisrael smiled at him, saying, I forgive you, he says, "is one thing. But really forgiving, that's another thing completely. In order to really get rid of any bad feelings I had towards you, even if they were subliminal, I needed to go the extra mile. That's real. Otherwise, maybe it wasn't real. Bottom line, you need to take out the trash if you want to refresh and reboot. That's the lesson of Trumas HaDeshen, and it's a lesson we all need to take on board in our lives as well. We're going to leave it here. Thank you. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. Thank you.